Mini-episode 1903 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini-episode 1903. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitary, original dignitary, and managing partner Rick Morris, along with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Fran Stuckberry, great sports writer from Our Sports Central. And we are here today to talk about the 2025-2026 college football season, taking a look back at everything that happened in the bowl season, the playoffs, any of the off-field issues, coaching changes, transfer portal, etc. All of that. And Fran and I last gathered on the show here mid-December to take a preview of the period of time that we're going to be looking back at. So let's see how it all unfolded and what surprises and non-surprises there were in the bunch. There were a lot of surprises, I think it's safe to say. So Fran, good to have you back on, my man. Great to have you as always. And we got a lot to look back at here today.
Yeah, glad to be talking college football with you once again, Rick.
Yes, and in terms of the bowl season, it didn't take too long for what I think is one of the more noteworthy things that happened here, which is my Ohio Bobcats, I think, extending to the second longest current win streak in college football, getting a win that they were able to capture in the Frisco Bowl this year. So you had that happening early on. We knew that it would be a very, very noteworthy Pop-Tarts Bowl. It was, as it was the previous year, a lot to be able to look back on. What were some of the highlights of bowl season, non-playoff version, for you?
Well, non-playoff version, that Hawaii Bowl was amazing with Hawaii, yes, and Cal. That game was great, action-packed. I mean, it gave something a nice, memorable Christmas Eve to really enjoy the game.
Yes, I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
And the Pop-Tarts Bowl was amazing. I mean, the branding, the game, the action, the excitement. I mean, mm-hmm. Notre Dame, you missed out.
That's right, yeah. But then again, the ACC didn't make any money off of them, so I'm sure Notre Dame felt consoled by that. But, many interesting bowl games.
It was plus the games were the Mayo Bowl where the coach got done with mayonnaise, the Boise Potato Bowl where the guy got done with French fries, the Frost Flakes Bowl where the Duke coach got dumped for Frost with Kelly Frost Flakes.
Yeah,
fun little gimmicks.
Yeah, a lot of gimmicks as always that these bowl games end up being populated by. My Tennessee Volunteers, it was very, very disappointing for me that in the Music City Bowl, they couldn't get it done against Illinois. Now, bringing in Jim Knowles to work with the defense next year, that is going to make Tennessee one of the teams to watch as far as the offseason goes. But really, and that's one of the things here too, right? It's a chance to kind of look ahead for next season to get a real sense of what's going on with that. You saw that in a very, very lively Citrus Bowl between Texas and Michigan. Those are two programs that were already strongly looking ahead to the 2026 college football season before they kicked off in what was a real barn burner that day.
Yeah, I mean, Arch Manning, I mean, he's getting much better next season than he was this season. He might be the Heisman front runner again next season. We'll see.
Yeah. And we'll be talking about Michigan a little bit later on, the coaching transition that they ended up going through and ending up with a significantly better coach than they had previously. But, oh, boy, the mess they had to go through to get from here to there. We'll be talking about the off-field stuff as we move along a little bit more. But before we get to the playoffs, any other points from the non-playoff part of the college bowl season worth getting into?
I mean the games, some of the games in general were entertaining. I like the Xbox Bowl with that robot. That was kind of cool. They did a last second bowl game with the Xbox Bowl in Frisco. I mean, that's a little facility for games. I mean, but in general, I mean, there were so many games. I mean, a lot of them were blowouts. It's just, you don't even know who's playing in these games. So, like, the one game that caught my attention was the Bad Mowers Pinstripe Bowl with Penn State winning that game over Clemson. I mean, that interim coach wanted to win. I mean that was a situation where you knew Penn State would be motivated over Clemson. And the Big Ten has dominated that bowl game, like 9 or 10 straight wins.
Yeah, that was a very, very interesting one. The failure bowl there with Penn State and Clemson. They did not think they'd be playing in the old Pinstripe Bowl. I guarantee you that when the season started. But that's where they ended up, on a snowy, blizzardy New York morning. And
both military academies, winning Army won their game and Navy won theirs in their bowl games.
Yes. And so a lot of noteworthy results when you look at the bowl season and the way that it played out. You got the ACC quote unquote champion Duke in the Sun Bowl. They managed to get a win over Arizona State, which I was impressed by. I didn't think they'd get the W over the Sun Devils, but they did. And so as this was going on, of course, you have relatively early on in bowl season when you get the college football quarterfinals, the games held on the campuses. You get that round starting up here, and we had those happening. It was a weekend where there were only really two games where the outcome was going to be much in doubt. Alabama ends up with a pretty big comeback win against Oklahoma. They look kind of down and out. They had lost the last two games to Oklahoma in this regular season and the previous one. They come back to win 34-24. Miami and Texas A&M in what I thought was going to be a cannon fodder game for Ohio State. Miami ends up putting the game away late 10-3. The other games, again, not really in doubt. Ole Miss thumping Tulane, Oregon over James Madison. Ole Miss with the coaching transition and a very, very, very messy one, the way that Lane Kiffin departed, all of the ugliness that was a part of that. Mississippi gets a big feel-good win at home, and spoiler alert, and ended up having some carryover.
Well, the thing is, Lane Kiffin ended up getting bonuses for games he never coached in, two bonuses.
Yeah, nice work if you can get it. So that was that first weekend, and that was one where – and there were a lot. There was the obligatory sort of, "Why is James Madison even here?" as far as the game against Oregon. But the way that the system is set up, if there's going to be a group of five game in there, then you're going to have a group of six, I guess, next year as the Pac-12 returns in diminished form. Then you're going to have this. I mean, it's inevitable. Somebody's going to end up being cannon fodder, and it's one of those things where, as much as everybody loves March Madness, there are 1 versus 16 games, and I think it's now twice in recent history where a 16 has beaten a 1. But going back to the 80s, when the current format came in, okay, you've had 1s over 16s routinely, 4 1 versus 16 matchups every year. So what we tolerate in March Madness, people whine about with college football, and I really don't get it.
Well, the thing is, Rick, if the AC didn't have that weird, bizarre tiebreaker, it wouldn't have been two group of five teams. And I think Miami would have got the bid as well as Notre Dame. So that would have been kind of it. What do you think about Notre Dame not playing in the bowl game? I guess they should have played, I think. But I guess, they were all upset and sad.
Well, I mean, I get where they're coming from to an extent, because again, me of all people, I'd kind of be a hypocrite if I was wagging my finger at them about spite. I've done some things in my life out of spite, and they were looking at the fact that the ACC, with the lobbying on behalf of Miami, really was coming at the expense of Notre Dame, and Notre Dame was looking at it like, hey, not for nothing, but we put a lot of money in your pockets. You benefit greatly by being aligned with us and having us as a quasi-affiliated entity with your conference. So I kind of get where they were coming from with that, and they didn't feel like they had anything to gain by playing that game. It would have been nice to see Jeremiah Love one last game and some of the other departing players for Notre Dame. It's a shame to not see him have that opportunity on that stage. But Yeah, it was. And again, Florida State not playing in the college postseason, and some other schools that ended up declining opportunities to play as well.
Well, Rick, I mean, next season, Notre Dame is guaranteed a playoff bid if they finish in the top 12, and their schedule is very easy.
Yes, and so they would be set up very nicely, potentially, for that to be the case. You move ahead to the quarterfinals over New Year's and New Year's Eve, and we start with what was, I don't think it's too much to say, a shocker, Miami 24-14 over Ohio State. The Buckeyes came out like they were basically comatose. There was no excuse for how flat they came out during that game. The pick six that they had turned out to be something that they couldn't recover from. And ultimately, yeah, I mean, Miami in that game proved that they were for real. I thought Notre Dame should have gotten that one spot over Miami, and they went out of their way this postseason to prove me wrong and that they belonged in there. Although, like you said, if the ACC wasn't completely incompetent, Miami would have had a chance to play for the conference championship, would have won, and Notre Dame would have gotten that extra at-large spot there. I was also completely wrong. I thought it was going to be a thriller with Oregon and Texas Tech. Boy, was I wrong. 23-0 Oregon. Texas Tech apparently leaving the offense completely at home for this one. Indiana over Alabama, 38-3 in the Rose Bowl. The only real surprise was the full extent of the thumping in this one. I don't think anybody seriously gave Alabama a chance. And then, again, a surprise for me. I thought Georgia was going to make it a season sweep over Ole Miss, but Trinidad Shambliss brings them back late. It was a thriller in the Sugar Bowl. Ole Miss advances to the national semifinals, setting up Miami, Mississippi, and then on the other side of the bracket, Indiana and Oregon. So those games through the course of New Year's Day and New Year's Eve brought a lot of excitement, really. Even the games that were blowouts, until the blowout took full form, as it did in the Orange Bowl and the Rose Bowl, it was still kind of thrilling watching it play out until it got all the way there.
I mean, I was enjoying the Oregon Texas Tech game for the first like three quarters, and after that, yeah, I lost interest. It was still a fun game. Texas Tech is going to be a contender going forward. The rest of all the NIL and the money they're spending, they're going to be a regular dance partner in this college football playoff, Rick.
Oregon will
be there as well with their the money in NIL. I mean, I thought the Alabama-Indiana game would be a little bit closer, but I mean, and yeah, just thumping them. Like in college game day, half the announcers picked Alabama to win that game. People were a little down on Indiana, and Indiana thumped Alabama. Fernando Mendoza, he's going to be a good pro, Rick. The Raiders are going to have one hell of a quarterback.
He's going to be excellent. And I know FDH senior editor Jason Jones, when we get into draft season on this show, we start getting into the discussions. He's a little more of a skeptic. He doesn't necessarily see him as having as high of a ceiling. But spoiler alert, the question I'm going to put to him is, name me something that he can't do. Because he can do everything. He can make the throws that he needs to make. He's relatively mobile for a guy who's 6'5". There's just nothing where you look at Mendoza and you say, well, his skill set doesn't encompass that. He was the best.
I mean, as we saw in the championship game, that amazing run, for the touchdown, fourth down. I mean, the guy has it all. I mean, as far as like Ty Simpson, I don't blame him for coming out, Rick, because the quarterback class next year is going to be awesome. You might as well get a chance to be a late first round pick than play another year in college football and get buried.
Well, the one part that I thought was a loser mentality was that he was not going to apparently keep his job at Alabama because of who they were going to have on the roster the next year. And like, he wanted to be remembered as a guy who just played at Alabama and no place else. That sounds like being a mark to me, to be honest with you, because it should be nothing about what's best for you, what's most advantageous. I think he could have used another year, much like Dante Moore. Dante Moore showed ultimately in the Peach Bowl he needed another year, and the fact that he was going to go to the Jets at two, another spoiler alert for the draft season on the show, when I will be ranting about how broken the draft process is, that a guy like Dante Moore could be second overall in the draft and a lot of these projections by not just the scouts but also the football media. And it's a thing where, again, the track record, you know this better than me, friend, because nobody watches more college football than you. The track record for guys who've only really played the equivalent of one season as a starting quarterback is very, very, very dim. That's also where Ty Simpson finds himself right now. So to me, Dante Moore, again, you could look at it like, oh, second pick overall. Look at the money that's there. Yeah, okay. But then you go to, no offense, Fran, a bum franchise like the Jets, where they couldn't take advantage of Sam Darnold, and look at him now. So it's a thing where I think guys getting enough seasoning in college, particularly with the NIL money that's there, is something that they're going to find to be advantageous. Somebody like Dwayne Haskins, I thought he was a can't miss when he went pro. And look at what happened to him, albeit in another broken place, the Dan Snyder, Washington Redskins at the time. So it's interesting, Fran. These quarterbacks really, really, really need the reps at the college level, I feel like.
Well, look at Anthony Richardson. He's going to be a carrying clipboard the rest of his career, or maybe get waived eventually. I mean, Bo Nix is a perfect example. He started so many games in college football, and look what he's doing with the Broncos. The reps, I mean, and now with NIL, I mean, you get a chance to make more money. These kids want to be Van Wilder, Rick. They want to stay in school 6, 7, 8 years and get that money because they know they're not going to get in the NFL.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And you know, for somebody, you know, you had quarterbacks like Matt Leinart back in the day where it was like just being able to have the hot tub parties at USC was payment enough for him. Plus, you know, whatever kind of $50 handshakes may or may not have been happening in LA back at the time. But now there's actual real money that's involved in this here. There's real inducement to be able to come back. And as I said, Dante Moore, that was one of the big stories of the Peach Bowl, was that, again, if he got thumped that badly against Indiana, and it wasn't just him, it was the whole team, he needs more time in college. He'll get it next year. Meanwhile, again, a thriller in the Fiesta Bowl. Miami emerges. It ends up being Indiana and Miami playing for the national championship in Miami. What was thought by many initially, it was a knee-jerk response, oh, it's going to be like a home game for Miami. Not so much by the way it played out, Fran.
No, I mean, well, the corporate situation, it wasn't like that at all. And now with NIL, look who shows up now for Indiana, Mark Cuban, spending all that money. He's on the bandwagon, they're winning. I mean, what Indiana did, Rick, was amazing. Every college university is going to be like, why not us? But I mean, but they had the recipe. They had the right coach. They did the NIL, the transfer portal. 13 players from James Madison he brought over and won that championship team. It was just synergy. Two years ago, Rick, that Indiana would be a top contender. Nobody. Yeah. They came out of nowhere. These other schools are like, why not? And I hope eventually there's a movie on Indiana school.
Well, I got to tell you, and I've been confessing on this show today about being wrong about a few things. And I will say that at the end of the 2023 college football season, when I saw that my alma mater, the Ohio Bobcats, we were about to be losing our quarterback, Curtis Rourke, due to NIL. And I was like, this guy's going to Indiana from our school? Like, the least the guy could do is have some dignity and go to a school where he's at least got a chance to win some games. What did I know? But again, Kurt Cignetti, as it's been said, the biggest turnaround in the history of college football. And that it almost diminishes it to say it in those words, because I don't even know what second place would be on that list or third place. The biggest losing program in the history of the sport goes from the crapper to the college football playoff the next year, goes to the national championship game and wins it the next year. And it was a game where, again, I expected them to beat Miami maybe a little bit more decisively, but it ended up being a win nonetheless. And it was a thing where, again, Indiana really kind of took over that stadium. But I really understand it, again, as an alumnus of a school with a historical futility record of our own, until recent years, but still what we've done in recent years is obviously nothing compared to what's happened in Indiana. If we ever made it to that level, I mean, I'd be selling organs out of my body just to afford tickets for each round going forward here. So you can understand that. Now, there may be a wave of home defaults in Indiana this year for all the people who, you know, took out second and third mortgages on their home to pay for the trips. But you know what, Fran? Even if these folks end up living out in a refrigerator box in the alley, I'm sure they'll tell you it was worth it to be there.
Well, the thing is, Rick, I mean, Indiana went 16-0. That's unheard of. I mean, that's amazing from a standpoint. Indiana just came out of nowhere. They were 1,001 prior to the season started. I wish I threw $10 on that.
Yeah.
Win a championship. It's just, I mean, nobody expected this. I mean, I expected them to be good, but not to this level.
Yeah. Well, and nobody expected that. Truly, nobody expected that to be the case. And it just continued to kind of unfold the way that it did until it was all over. And again,
30 million people, right? 30 million people watched the championship. 30 million.
I was kind of surprised that that was the case. I mean, it is one of these things where, again, Miami is, you know, a historic blue chip brand. And Indiana, again, a lot of people looking to see, again, no longer the Cinderella, but people still think of them that way. I think that's all gone now that the season's over and they've won it. Nobody will ever think of them as being a Cinderella ever again. But maybe just the legacy of where they were, people were thinking of them that way. But it's one of those things where I was like, I think I actually picked up on this thought in my head when I was watching the Rose Bowl. Like, for all the people that are like, it's so disorienting to watch Indiana doing what they're doing. It doesn't even feel real. It actually feels pretty familiar to me because Kurt Cignetti is a disciple of Nick Saban and also is somebody who really takes after his very dour attitude. So like when you're watching a team in red out there on the field wearing very similar type uniforms and you're seeing this kind of dour kind of guy on the sidelines pouting around like he's not happy even when his team's up 50, doesn't it remind you what Bama was, at least stylistically? It looks familiar to me.
Oh, it definitely was. So, I mean, it's just like a hit, Rick. I mean, Indiana just, I mean, they came out of nowhere. They dominated the season. They beat teams, you know, they never, Oregon on the road. That was impressive early in the season. Ohio State and the Big Ten Championship. They did what they had to do. They ran that gauntlet. They really, in the Big Ten, now look at the Big Ten, Rick, 3 straight years with the national championship. The SEC is going, bye-bye. Who's going to step up and win a championship in the SEC over the Big Ten next season?
Well, and you've still got, again, the last two champs especially, Indiana and Ohio State right up there. The fact that I'm not seeing Indiana as the default number one in the early projections for next year puzzles me because this is a team where, again, they were doing it with hardly any four-star and five-star players, a lot of three-stars, a lot of guys, and they're continuing to kind of build in the same way. They got one of the top quarterbacks for next year out of the portal, as they did the past two seasons. So they've got a very, very, very familiar formula. And so you're not going to have the same players out there next year at a number of positions, but you're going to have a demonstrable system that works. A lot of it is just going with veteran-type players. This is something we haven't really seen in terms of and the COVID thing, that's now, I think, finally expiring as far as the extra year of eligibility. But Indiana getting guys with as many years of eligibility as possible and throwing them out there, they've put together a formula that works. And they had, as you said, the first ever 16-0 season in the history of college football. I don't know why they're not number one until somebody knocks them off. The notion that people would have them 3 or 4 or 5 going into next year is something that I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand either. But like I said, I mean, it's college football. I mean, they're not going to give Indiana all that credit.
No, they're not going to, but they're going to have to. This is a team that, this is the quickest blink of an eye in the history of sports between underdog and blue blood, because as long as Kurt Cignetti's there, they're a blue blood. This is the new era of Indiana football, and nothing that happened before matters in any way, shape, or form as far as it goes. History essentially started at Indiana in the 2024 college football season when they were born as a superpower, and that's what they are now. You look ahead to next year, and again, there are a lot of changes that happened, as we've seen. Again, the transfer portal did what it did, as always here. The coaching carousel, we talked about this before, we teased it with Michigan, the third of the three national champions. Somehow or another, 2023 never got vacated, notwithstanding the cheating scandals. But Sharon Moore eventually gets turfed out of there in terms of, and we would have thought that it would have been like, gee, I don't think the guy's got a high enough ceiling. Gee, you know, they just hired him to try to keep, you know, the Harbaugh era going, and he basically took it about as far as it could before it ran out of steam. No, none of us had, you know, huge personal scandal on our bingo cards for 2025/2026. And the notion now that apparently he might have been getting blackmailed by some of the players along the way, somehow from all of that, the coaching search gets going late in the process. Many other prime coaches have been snatched up. They end up at the end of the day with Kyle Whittingham. And it's just like, how did they make that happen? Talk about lucky. Like, he ended up getting eased out of Utah because they wanted to go with his young assistant as the heir apparent. And I get that. Eventually, you have to turn the page at a program. But having Kyle Whittingham available to be plucked there is a lot better than they deserved. But when we talk about all the stuff that happened with Lane Kiffin, I mean, I didn't think anything could top that particular circus. But what happened in Michigan certainly takes the cake on that one.
Well, Kyle Whittingham has a winning pedigree. He's won, you know, he won a lot in Utah. And the thing is, that's the type of coach you need to get that, you know, that the team back in order, stability, a winning coach, winning culture. The guy does it by the book. You had to have a squeaky clean glide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Whittingham is just exactly what they need, a no-nonsense kind of a guy. He's going to go in there, and he's going to get it turned around, and Michigan is going to be a legit team next year. They were kind of a fugazi contender at the end of the year, where it was like they only had two losses coming into the Ohio State game. Had they managed to win that game, they might have fluked their way in. But again, Ohio State really kind of exposed them. Michigan was not a team that was going to make it anywhere, even if they did manage to back into it. They're going to be a legit team next year. New coach, new attitude, and Michigan is truly going to be back next year, as opposed to what you saw of them the two previous years. You still have Indiana, Oregon, Ohio State at the top of the conference here. A transfer portal where, again, we saw a lot of very interesting things happen. LSU, unsurprisingly, comes out of it very good. Lane Kiffin getting off to a great start in Baton Rouge after the mess that he left behind in Mississippi. Not so much that the program suffered, because they haven't yet, but the personal messiness that he left behind with the way that he did what he did, the whole circus that he created. Again, at LSU, they're not shedding any tears because they've got a great start for next year already.
Well, the thing is, Rick, with LSU, the guns to their head, they got to win a championship in the next 2 to 3 years. Otherwise, the pressure in LSU is going to be is amazing. I mean, LSU is being looked upon as a savior for the SEC, the one to, you know, get to the top and knock off the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And maybe Texas to a degree, maybe.
Texas, you can't count out Georgia. They surprised me in falling to Mississippi. But Georgia is certainly right there. And even Mississippi, Pete Golding, a first-time head coach, but the recruiting has stayed pretty strong where they're at. They've held up pretty well so far. The Mississippi boosters, I think they had every desire to stick it to Lane Kiffin by staying strong with their contributions, and they've done that. And that is something that's very, very important. And in none of this have we even mentioned Alabama yet, which kind of tells you everything like that. Year three is going to be very, very, very critical for what happens there and whether the Kalen DeBoer era can endure into a year four or not. The way that the season ended was not beloved by anybody in Tuscaloosa, notwithstanding winning that first college football playoff game going before the quarterfinal, where they got blown out in the Rose Bowl. And that's one of those things where, again, I do feel like when you look at that, you could say, well, Alabama legitimized their invitation by beating Oklahoma as they did. I kind of look at it the other way. Like, I get that the committee doesn't want to dissuade teams from being in a college football conference championship game. They don't want to penalize you for losing that game. That said, I feel like there should be a penalty if you get blown off the field like they did against Georgia. Okay, I don't think it should just be a gimme, like, oh, it's nothing but a positive just for being there. I think you should have the capacity to play your way out of it. I feel like Alabama probably should have played their way out of it by how that went. And the fans know this, and they're not happy. There's never a Nick Saban team that looked like that team did against Indiana in that game. And that's where, and I'd said this, I think, on the show earlier in the season, that it's not just what happened at Indiana the last 2 years, but it's what's happened at Vanderbilt. It's what happened at Mississippi. It's what happened at a number of other historical non-powers.
Texas Tech.
If we want to go further down the rat hole, we could say Georgia Tech. We could say Virginia. We could say Louisville. You wouldn't put those teams necessarily on the same level as the first couple schools we talked about. But it's what you said before about Cignetti and the pressure it puts on other schools, because all across the country, athletic directors and boosters are turning to their high-priced coaches and saying, if he could get this done there, why can't you do this? If they can win at Vanderbilt, why can't you do this? It's really larding on the pressure, and somebody like James Franklin really felt that intensely at Penn State, because at Penn State, with everything they had to offer, and he appears to have landed on his feet okay at Virginia Tech, and they may be an ACC contender next year, but it's a valid question. If coaches at weaker, historically weaker schools with historically weaker setups are getting it done, why can't you, Mr. Prized football coach, get it done at a historic powerhouse like this one here? That's a fascinating dynamic for me, is how it's just turning up the heat on coaches that are on the hot seat at blue blood programs.
Well, speaking of Penn State, what do you think about the Matt Campbell hire? It came late, but they got their coach, the guy who won at Iowa State. So, I mean, he'll stabilize the program. But is Penn State going to be a contender? I feel they're way down on it, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could take a year or so to regroup. Matt Campbell's a good coach. I think he's an upgrade over what they had with Franklin, which, again, it's not, and it's never been that Franklin's a bad coach. He's certainly not, but it was like a 4-21 record against the top 10 teams in the country. He couldn't get it done against the best teams in the country, and when you're at Penn State, that's unacceptable. Now, Campbell wasn't the first choice that they had there. Apparently, they were going after, as I have dubbed him, the other Coach K from BYU. Coach Satake, he was apparently the first choice there. The gazillionaire who owns Crumble Cookies apparently is a big booster of BYU. He steps in, ponies up the money. They keep their coach. Penn State's out looking again. So that's the one thing Penn State and Michigan have in common, is that for where it was in the process, and let's not forget, Penn State got an earlier jump on this than did most teams, and yet they were still one of the later teams to lock down a coach. For where they were at in the process, Penn State and especially Michigan, they both got way luckier than they deserve to be in terms of the caliber coach they were able to lock in at that late date. Because, you know, the merry-go-round had pretty much stopped by that point, Fran, and they still got guys who can come in here and get the job done in those programs.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely worked out for both of them, and both of them are definitely going to be in good shape. I mean, Michigan will be obviously – Michigan's already top 10 in the rankings for next season already, and Penn State – we'll give them another year, you know, give them some grace, and they'll be a contender 2 years from now.
They will be, and I think, again, just the setup for next year. You've got, as we said before, the Pac-12 coming back in somewhat abbreviated fashion here, basically sucking half of the Mountain West over to their side. So they'll be back as a non-power conference, but again, you have a year in the Big 12. Where once again, Texas Tech looks to be reigning supreme, but BYU's not going anywhere. Arizona State, last season's champion, could very well be back in the mix. So as far as, again, teams that can win a national championship, we said this coming into the season, they're exceedingly thin. We said at the time, they probably don't have anybody that qualifies there. You almost started to wonder about Texas Tech by late in the season, but they got exposed against Oregon. I think they will be better next year. Their offense will be better. But national championship contender, I don't know about that. But as far as like week in, week out, the depth in the conference, the teams playing each other and jockeying back and forth, Cincinnati, Houston even, there are enough teams in the Big 12 to really make it interesting week to week in season. And the same thing in the ACC, albeit Miami has finally gotten back to where they want to be nationally, and they're the team to beat until proven otherwise. The dominant number one, I would say, going into the ACC next season.
Especially with the Duke transfer, they basically plucked him, got, bought the buyout. They're basically paying quarterbacks. These teams are just, it's like free agency. Every year they're getting these guys out of the portal. I mean, he was already making $4.5 million at Duke, and now he's getting paid more in Miami. It's crazy how much money these kids, and I think that makes you wonder, these kids are getting so much money in college. When they get, are they even motivated when they get to the pros? I mean, well, they have all this money.
I mean, that's a good question, but also, and again, a lot of times on air, I'm a little bit hesitant to voice a question about something that I don't know, lest I look dumb. Like, yeah, well, Rick, if you'd have done a little research, you'd have known that. But this is not one of those things. What happened to the whole deal with the $20 million? Like this, the house settlement with the NCAA before the season, it was supposed to be, okay, everybody's got their $20 million, and from now on, the only NIL things have got to be legit NIL. And we're going to have like a Big Six accounting firm policing these deals here. So it's like, how are colleges still throwing around the money? Because I'm pretty sure I was told at the time, as was everybody else, that we weren't going to be seeing any of this Wild West stuff anymore.
And now we have tampering. And now we have schools being accused of tampering. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, the spring games basically got canceled because that was basically a free scout for players, other colleges to see other players they can pluck in the NIL. It's crazy now. It's so, college football is good now, but it's so corporate, Rick. NIL is made more of an even playing field, Rick, but it's just so all about the money. They don't, these kids all, it's like 1 year they play well, they want more money. It's money, 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 money. Sounds like Shark Tank.
That's all it is. And that's again what college football is going to be. But so many big games next year. And I was perusing just the schedule for Ohio State because my dad's a season ticket holder, just out of curiosity. And when you talk about huge games next year, boy, oh boy, is Ohio State going to account for many of them. Week two of the season, the second half of the home and home where they go to Texas. But they're going to have at Indiana, October 15th, which I'm already saying that's the number one college football game of the year in my estimation. They play Oregon next year. Also, USC, I think, on Halloween, in what is kind of a make-or-break year, I think, for Lincoln Riley at USC. And then, of course, the traditional Michigan game at the end. And, oh, by the way, Penn State, just in case they're any good next year. Oh, also Iowa, too. So for Ohio State, they're a team that, again, when they got to the playoffs, you know, you do a post-mortem, like what went wrong. And it was like, gee, the fact that, like, after the Texas game, they really weren't pushed for the most part the whole year. And not even in the Michigan game at that. They were obviously pushed and lost to Indiana. And then they just couldn't flip the switch back on for Miami. Ohio State, I think, got lulled to sleep by their schedule this year. They may have the opposite problem in 2026. Because if they're not consistently at the top of their game, we may be about to find out if a three-loss team is going to make the playoffs next year, because Ohio State might be lucky to come out of this season with less than three losses unless they're really on their game the whole year.
Well, Rick, speaking of playoffs, the ACC, the Big Ten, and the SEC couldn't agree to a playoff expansion format, so it stays at 12. I mean, the SEC won 16, the Big Ten won 24. 12 is good. I mean, you're always going to have teams that are on the outside looking in.
Yeah, 24 is ridiculous. I don't want to hear anything about that. I mean, 16, I might be able to be convinced on 16, but I'm the guy that never wanted to budge off a 4 in the first place, so I wouldn't be that enthusiastic about it. Also, here's the part. If you go to 16, what does that look like? Because the NFL has basically put that – chokehold on the weekends here. We're not giving up Saturdays and Sundays. So you could play maybe like Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. If you played the first round games all throughout that first week, end of the weekend, I suppose. But, you know, that makes the college football playoff look an awful lot like Maction. And something tells me that they would be too snooty to want to do that, play Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night games for the playoff. We'll see. But the one thing I do know is that it's always a pleasure breaking it down with you, Fran Stuckberry, and look forward to talking football again with you subsequently on the show. And potentially, as things go, as you're covering what you're covering, potentially some other sports as well, which we've done because of your coverage with our Sports Central, where you are covering a whole host of many of the other sports out there that are not at necessarily the major league level, but are very interesting and compelling to watch nonetheless. You write about so many different and interesting things. Perhaps we'll talk about that next time on the show. Perhaps it'll be college football, but it's always great to have you on, my man.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it.
Always great to have you here, Fran. Thank you, buddy. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1903.